Watching with interest, the princess took a couple of steps back, looking nervously up and down the alleyway. Any second she expected to see a squad of angry troopers racing around a corner toward her, alerted by some hidden alarm they had unknowingly triggered. Only jungle sounds reached her, however, as Luke activated his saber. Instead of the meter-plus shaft of white energy, the pommel put forth a short, needle-thin spoke. With concentration worthy of a master craftsman, Luke stepped forward and moved the energy beam along the slight space visible between door and frame. A third of the way down the door, a distant click sounded, and the door slid obediently aside. Readjusting his saber, Luke flicked it off and replaced it at his waist. "Go ahead," she told him. "The droids and I will keep watch." He nodded, vanished inside. Luke's principal objective was conveniently located close to the back of the store. He spent several minutes scrounging through the racks before he found what he wanted. Taking the well-used clothing, he hurried to the back entrance and tossed the booty to the princess. Then he stepped just outside the door, reached back in, and touched the closed stud. He pulled his arm clear as the door slid shut behind him. With luck, it might be several weeks before the storekeeper discovered his loss. Well pleased with himself, Luke stepped down to the ground and began unsnapping his flight suit. He was partly undressed when he paused and noticed the princess standing and staring at him. "Come on, we've got to hurry." She put hands on Seal Curve hips, cocked her head to one side, and stared meaningfully at him. "Oh," he murmured, half smiling. He turned away and continued undressing. Feeling that nothing had changed behind him, he sneaked a glance, saw the princess still eyeing him uncomfortably. "What's wrong, princess?" She sounded embarrassed. "Luke, I like you, and we've known each other for a while, but I'm not sure I can trust you now." He grinned. "You know it won't make any difference if the stormtroopers find us here in our flight suits," he gestured. "You can change in the bush." Turning away from her, he continued changing his own attire. She looked back at the nearby jungle. Tiny yellow points of light, the eyes of unknown creatures winked on and off in the bushes. Strange, discomforting sounds hissed and bleated at her. She sighed, started to slip out of her own flight suit, then paused. "Well, what are you two staring at?" "Oh, sorry, I..." An insistent whistle. "Yes, you're right, R2. Both droids turned away from the princess. Shortly, Luke was able to turn and study her approvingly. Her simple, worn suit was a bit snug, but otherwise looked quite natural on her. "Well," she asked, obviously not enthralled with her new wardrobe, "what are you staring at?" "I think maybe something in a print," he began. He had to react quickly to duck the boot she threw at him. It clattered off the metal door. "Sorry," he told her, sounding like he meant it as he picked up the boot. Bending over his old suit, he began transferring various items from it and from his backpack to the belt pouches of the miner's uniform. One small case he flipped open carefully, went rapidly through its contents before snapping it shut and slipping it into a pocket. "I've got enough Imperial currency to last us a while. You?" She glanced away from him. "What would a representative of the Alliance be doing with common currency on a diplomatic mission?" Luke sighed. "We'll make do, I suppose. How would you like something to eat besides a concentrate?" She faced him, visibly more cheerful. "I could eat half a chushu, Luke. Are you sure we ought to, though?" "We have to mingle sometime. As long as we don't look or act like total strangers, no one should bother us." They started back toward the main street after burying their packs and flight suits in a syrupy bog. They were halfway there when the increasing light caused Luke to stop. "What's the matter?" the princess asked, worried. "Two things," Luke insisted, eyeing her. "First of all, there's your walk." "And what's wrong with my walk?" "Nothing, that's the trouble." Her brows drew together in puzzlement. "I don't follow you, Luke," he explained slowly. "You're walking like a princess, not like a working woman. Slump your shoulders. Take some of the confidence and distance out of your stride. Stagger a little. You've got to walk like a tired mineral grubber, not like one of the Imperial family. And then there's the second thing." Reaching out, he tousled her neat hairdo violently. "Hey," she objected, struggling. When he stepped back, her hair formed a nebulous maze of undisciplined strands around her head and face, the intricate double bun she'd worn now completely obliterated. "That's better," he observed, "but there's still something not right." After a moment, he reached down, picked up a handful of moist earth, then stepped toward her. "Oh, no," she warned, putting up both hands defensively and moving backward. "I've been living in sludge for days. I'm not letting you smear that gunk on me. Have it your way, Leah. He dropped the dirt and hit the ground with a loud splat. You do it. The princess hesitated. Then, using spit and hands and a minimum of dirt, she succeeded in wiping every trace of makeup from her face and dirtying it as little as possible. How's this? She asked guardedly. Luke nodded approvingly. Much better. You look like someone who's been out in the desert too long without water. Thanks, she muttered. I'm beginning to feel like it, too. It's necessary. I just want to see us get off this world alive. We won't if we don't find that food you mentioned. He had to hurry to catch up with her as she headed toward the street. Chapter 3, page 38. They conversed in whispers as they made their way down the metal walkway toward the better-lit buildings. More and more miners and other figures began to appear, materializing out of the mists. The town's beginning to come alive, Leah murmured. They probably run 3 alternating shifts at the mine. Looks like one is just letting out. I don't know, Luke confessed, but you've got to do something about your walk. Slouch some more. She nodded, making an effort to comply. Luke tried not to stare at passing faces, afraid one might be staring back at them. You're still too tense. Relax. There, that's better. They stopped before a reasonably quiet, fairly well-maintained structure that advertised itself as a tavern. It looks peaceful enough. He turned. 3PO, you and R2 wait out here. No sense asking for trouble. Find a dark corner somewhere and stay quiet until we come back. You don't have to urge me, Master Luke, the tall golden droid exclaimed fervently. Come on, R2. Both droids headed for a narrow passageway between the tavern and its neighboring building. What do you think, Princess? Should we take a chance? I'm starving. We've wasted enough time. She put a hand over the door switch. Immediately, the double doors slid apart. Lights and noise and talk in overwhelming quantities assailed them instantly. Having exposed themselves, they had no choice but to enter, as casually as they could manage. Low booths filled with hectic humanity honeycombed the tavern interior. The miasma of narcotic incense and other smokes nearly asphyxiated Luke, and he had to struggle not to cough. What's wrong? The princess looked worried, though unaffected by the decadent atmosphere. People are looking at you. It's the air, he explained, fighting to breathe normally. There's something in it. A whole bunch of somethings. The princess chuckled. Too much for you, fighter pilot? Luke wasn't ashamed to admit it. When he could spare the wind to talk again, he told her, Basically, I'm a country boy, Leia. I haven't had too much exposure to sophisticated entertainments. She sniffed the air appraisingly. I wouldn't call these scents sophisticated. Thick, yes, but not sophisticated. Somewhere near the center of the human whirlpool, they miraculously came upon an empty table. The princess concentrated intently on the tabletop when the human waiter approached them. She needn't have worried. He didn't give them a glance. Your pleasure? He inquired simply, distantly. The man smoked something on the job, Luke noted. What's best tonight? He asked the man, striving to sound like someone who'd just spent 10 hours in the bowels of the earth. Comerken steak, flank cut, and Uderwerks, usual supplements. For 2, Luke told him, keeping the conversation to a minimum. That appeared to suit the attendant fine.
Got it,
he replied with equal perfunctoriness, and waded off into the mob. He didn't ask any questions, the princess murmured excitedly, looking back up at Luke. No, this might be easier than I thought. He was beginning to feel something like hope. Then his expression darkened. What is it, Luke? He gestured, and she turned to look toward the bar. A large, hulking miner was being feebly assailed by something human-sized, skinny, and covered completely with light green fur. It had wide, nocturnal eyes and a crest of higher, darker fur running from the crown of its head down the middle of its back. A simply worked skin of some unknown animal was wrapped around its pelvic region, and several jangling necklaces adorned with primitive decorations swung from the neck. Presently, the creature began making mewing, begging noises in a high, rippling voice. The alien sing-song was coated with an unmistakable hint of desperation. "These, sir," it begged. "Smav drink? Vickerman? Vickerman?" The big miner met this pitiful request by putting out a broad foot and kicking the native in the face. Luke winced and looked away. The princess glanced at him. What's wrong, Luke? I can't stand to see anything abused like that, he muttered. Human or alien or animal. He faced her curiously. How can you watch it? I saw my whole world, several million people destroyed, she responded with chilling matter-of-factness. Nothing mankind does surprises me any more, except that anyone could still be surprised by it. She turned her clinical gaze back to the scene at the bar. "Bootop," the miner bellowed at the Aborigine, while his companions chortled among themselves. "Bootop, Vess!" Its head twitching in what seemed to be an unnatural action, the whining, pleading alien stared up at the man, wiping the blood from its face. "Vickerman! Vickerman!" "Yeah, Vickerman," the miner admitted, tiring of the little game. "Bootop!" Without further prompting, the native dropped on its belly. An unexpectedly long, snake-like tongue darted out and began to lick the grime and mud from the man's boots. "I'm going to be sick," Luke whispered, barely audible. The princess merely shrugged. "We have our devils and our angels, Luke. You have to be ready to handle both." When she looked back to the bar, the native had finished his demeaning task and was holding up cupped hands anxiously. "Tend Vickerman now? Now?" "Yeah, sure," the miner said. Reaching onto the bar, he picked up an oddly formed bottle and touched a button on its side. Part of the bottle's upper section filled with a dark liquid. It stopped filling with a click. Turning to face the expectant native, the miner tilted the bottle over, spilling the thick red liquor onto the floor instead of in the cupped hands. While the men and women at the bar enjoyed their final laugh at the poor creature's expense, it dropped to a prone position, and that amazing tongue flicked in and out like a frog's to lap up the liquor before it retreated into cracks and depressions in the floor. Unable to watch further, Luke let his curious gaze wander around the large, smoke-filled chamber. Now he saw more of the green-furred bipeds moving about. Many were begging with an air of frantic hopefulness, others engaged in performing some menial task. "I don't recognize this race." "Neither do I," the princess admitted. "They must be native to this world. The Empire isn't noted for the gentleness with which it treats non-allied aborigines." Luke was about to comment, but she made a quieting gesture. The attendant had arrived with their food. The meat had a peculiar color, the vegetables more so, but everything was hot and of good flavor. Three spigots emerged flower-like from the center of their table. Filling his glass from one, he sampled the contents expectantly. "Not bad." Meanwhile, the princess tasted her meat gingerly. Her mouth wrinkled as she chewed, swallowed. "Not what I'd order if I had a choice." "We don't," Luke pointed out. "No, we don't. We..." She stopped, staring, and Luke turned to look behind him. The attendant was still standing there, watching her. As soon as he noticed her looking back at him, he turned and walked away. "You think he suspects?" she murmured worriedly. "How could he? Your clothes are right. Even I wouldn't recognize you." Partly reassured, Leia bent over her plate and resumed eating. "Look over there," she said. Luke turned, glanced furtively in the indicated direction. The attendant was talking with a tall, urbane man dressed in the uniform of an imperial civil servant. "They do suspect," she whispered tightly. She started to stand. "I've had enough, Luke. Let's get out of here." "We can't rush off, especially if we're being watched," he countered. "Don't panic, princess." "I said I'm leaving, Luke." Nervous, she started to turn and leave. Without realizing what he was doing, he reached out, slapped her hard across the face, and as heads turned in their direction, said loudly, "No favors for you until I'm finished eating." One hand went to her burning cheek. Wide-eyed and voiceless, the princess slowly sat back down. Luke frantically attacked his steak as the uniformed imperial sauntered over to them, backed by the attendant at a discreet distance. "If there's some trouble," he began. "No, no trouble," Luke assured him, forcing a smile. The man didn't leave. "Can I help you, maybe?" "Not you. It's clear what you are, miner." The bureaucrat's oily gaze shifted to Leia. "I'm more curious about your companion here." Leia didn't look up at him. "Why?" Luke wondered cheerfully. "What's the problem?" "Well, she dresses a little like a miner," the man said. "But as Airlie's here," and he indicated the attendant, noted, "her hands would seem to indicate some other profession." With a start, Luke also noticed the princess's hands. Soft, pale, uncalloused, clearly the hands of anyone but a manual worker. Luke's years on his uncle's farm had equipped his body, including his hands, to play the role of simple miner, but Princess Organa had probably spent her time handling only book tapes, never an excavator or pitter. He thought furiously. "No, she's... I bought her." Leia twitched, stared at him a moment before returning resolutely to her food. "Yes, she's a servant of mine. Spend all my earnings on her." He tried to sound indifferent, shrugged as he returned to his eating. "She's not much, of course." Her shoulders shook. "But she was the best I could afford. And she's kind of amusing to have around, though she tends to get out of line at times, and I have to slap her down." The bureaucrat nodded understandingly, smiled for the first time. "I sympathize, young man. Sorry to interrupt your meal." "No bother," Luke called as the man returned to his own table. The princess glared up at him. "You enjoyed that, didn't you?" "No, of course not. I had to do it to save us." She rubbed her cheek. "And that servant girl story?" "It was the first logical thing I could think of," he insisted. "Besides, it explains you as well as anything could." He sounded pleased. "No one will question you once the word gets around." "Gets around?" She rose. "If you think, Luke Skywalker, that I'm going to act as your servant until..." "Hey, honey, you okay?" a new voice inquired. Luke looked at the old woman who appeared next to the princess. Placing a firm hand on the princess's shoulder, she exerted a gentle but unyielding pressure. Still slightly stunned, the princess sat down slowly. Luke eyed the woman warily as she pulled a chair up to their table. "We haven't met, and I don't remember inviting you to join us. So if you'll just leave my servant and me alone..." "Oh, I wouldn't bother you two, boy," the woman insisted in a tone suggesting subtly that she knew something they didn't. She jerked her head toward the princess. "Ain't surprised we haven't met before. You two are strangers here, ain't you?" That statement seemed to snap the princess out of her paralysis. She gave the old woman a startled stare and looked away, anywhere but at those knowing, accusing eyes. "What makes you say a ridiculous thing like that?" Luke stammered. She leaned conspiratorially close. "Old Halla has a pretty good eye for faces. You're not residents of this town, and I ain't seen you in none of the other four. Sick and decrepit as this world is, I know all the sickies and decrepits inhabiting it. You're new to me." We came in on the last ship," Luke alibied blindly. She grinned at him, unimpressed. "Did you now? Trying to fool old Halla, ain't you? No, don't look so frightened, boy and girl. Your face is turning white as the inside of a trooper's belly. So you're strangers. That's good. Good. I need strangers. I need you to help me." The princess swerved to stare wonderingly at her. "You want us to help you?" "Surprised, ain't you?" Halla crackled. "Help you do what?" Luke queried in confusion. "Just help," she said, casually cryptic. "You help me, I help you. And I know you need help, because there are no strangers on this world, and yet you're here. Want to know how I know you're strangers?" She leaned over the table again and wagged a knowing finger at Luke. "Because, young man, the Force is strong within you." Luke smiled sickly at her. "The Force is a superstition, a myth people swear by. It's used to frighten children." "Is that so?" Halla sat back and folded her arms in satisfaction. "Well then, boy, the superstition is strong in you, much stronger than anyone else I've met on this forsaken scoop of mud." Abruptly, Luke was peering closer at her. "What is it, Luke?" the princess asked, seeing the expression that had come over his face. He ignored her. "You said your name was Halla." The woman nodded slowly once. "You have a little of the Force about you, too." "More than a little, sapling," she argued indignantly. "I am a master of the Force. A master." Luke said nothing. "You want proof, then?" she went on. "Watch." Concentrating hard on a spice shaker in the middle of the table under one of the spigots, she made it quiver slightly. It bounced once against the table, twice, and moved several centimeters to its left. Sitting back, Halla took a deep breath and wiped the sweat from her brow. "There, you see, a little of the Force indeed." "I'm convinced," Luke confessed, with a curious look toward the curious princess, a look that said he was anything but impressed by such parlor tricks. "You do have a lot of the Force about you." "I can do other things when I want to, too," Halla announced proudly. "Two manipulators of the Force. We're destined to join hands, huh?" "I'm not so sure," the princess began. "Don't worry about me, little pretty," Halla instructed her. She reached out to touch the princess's hand. Leia drew hers away uncertainly. Halla studied her, smiled, grabbed the wrist hard. "You think I'm crazy, don't you? You think old Halla's crazy?" The princess shook her head. "No, I didn't say that. I never said that." "Eh, but you thought it, didn't you?" When Leia didn't reply, Halla shrugged. If she was offended, she didn't show it. "No matter, no matter." She let go of the princess's wrist, and Leia drew it away slowly, rubbed it with the other hand. "Why do you want to help us?" Luke inquired firmly, assuming just for the sake of discussion that we need any help, and that your guesses are right. "Just for the sake of discussion, boy," she mimicked him. "I'll get to that. Tell me what you need from me." "Now look, old woman," Luke began threateningly. She wasn't intimidated. "It won't work with me, swaddle clothes. You don't want it widely advertised that you're strangers here, do you?" Her voice rose slightly with the last, and Luke made shushing motions at her, glancing around to see if anyone had overheard. "Okay, since you know we're strangers, you know what we need. We have to get off this planet." Princess gave him a warning look, but he shook it off. "No, relax. She does have the Force about her." He turned back to face the oldster. "Who are you, anyway?"
"Just old Halla," the woman declared blankly. "And you just want to get off Mimban. You didn't pick me a simple one, did you?"
She frowned slyly. "Say, how did you two get here anyways? You can't convince me you came on the regular supply ship."
"Regular supply ship?" Leah exclaimed. "You mean Sarcophus knows about this installation?"
"Now, woman, did I say where the transport was from?" Halla snorted derisively. "The Sarcophagians, those provincials. This place is right in their backyard, and they don't know about it."
"No, the Imperial government operates the mine and the towns direct."
"We suspected as much," Luke admitted.
"They monitor space out for many planetary diameters," Halla went on. "The Sarcophagians have a pretty good colony going on 10. If a ship passes anywhere close by, they shut down everything. The mine, the landing beacon, everything."
"I think I see why they didn't detect us," Luke ventured. Leah put out a restraining hand, looked at him warningly. He shook her off.
"Either we trust Halla or we don't. She already suspects enough to turn us over to the local enforcers any time she wants to."
He looked openly at the old woman.
"We were traveling from Sarcarpus X to 4 on business."
"You were coming from the rebel base on 14, you mean," Halla corrected him smugly. "So much for trust."
When Luke choked on his reply, she waved it away. "Never mind, boy. The only government I recognize is my own. If I wanted to sell out the rebels, do you think that base'd still be there?"
Luke forced himself to relax, smiled at her. "We were traveling in a pair of single-seat fighters. If the instrumentation here is standard, it's not calibrated to recognize anything that small. That must be why there's been no alarm raised. We got down undetected."
"Where are your two ships?" Halla asked with concern. "If they're nearby, they might be found soon."
Luke made an indifferent gesture in a generally northeast direction. "Out there somewhere, several days walking. That's if the muck that passes for ground here hasn't swallowed them up by now." Halla gave a gratified snort. "Good. People don't stray very far from the towns. Not likely they'll be discovered. How did you manage to land without the field and beacon?"
"Land?" the princess snapped. "That's funny. We ran into some kind of field distortion effect produced by the energy mining, I'll bet. It wiped out our onboard instrumentation. I'd expect the ship needs special shielding to pass through an atmosphere affected by that kind of waste energy. It's a damn good thing we did, though, or we would have set down right on the Imperial's field," she finished.
"You see, Halla," Luke explained, "you have to help us arrange off-world passage."
"Next to impossible, boy. Think of something else. You're here illegal without proper identification. The moment anyone asks you to produce it and you can't, they'll dump you in the local Loctite for questioning.
The local head is a mind-ugly ug named Grammel." She looked at each of them in turn, solemn. "A good man to avoid."
"All right," Luke agreed easily. "Then if we can't leave through normal channels, you'll have to help us steal a ship."
For the first time since she'd joined them, Halla sat speechless. "Anything else you'd like, boy?" she finally wondered. "Grammel's cloak of office, or maybe the Emperor's dualities. Steal a ship? You've got to be out of your mind, boy."
"We're in sound company, then," the princess observed with satisfaction.
Halla turned on her. "I've had just about enough of you, little pretty. I'm not sure I need your help."
"Do you have any idea who I am?" the princess started to tell her.
She caught herself just in time. "Not that it matters. What does matter is that you can't do it, can you?"
Halla started to object, but the princess cut her off challengingly.
"Can you?"
"It's not that I can't, little pretty," Halla said carefully. "It's that the risks involved to make it worthwhile."
She went quiet, finally looked up reluctantly at Luke.
"All right, boy and lady, I'll help you steal your ship."
Luke looked excitedly over at the princess, who continued to watch Halla. "On that one condition." The princess nodded knowingly. "What condition?" she inquired formally.
"You help me first."
"I don't see that we have much choice," Luke essayed. "What do you need us to help you with?"
"To find something," Halla began. "With your knowledge of the Force combined with mine, boy, it should be simple. But it's something I can't do alone, and something I can't trust anybody else with. I know I can trust you, because if you try to cross me, I'll sell you to Grammel."
"Sensible," the princess noted easily. "You say the task will be simple? What are we supposed to find?" Hala looked around the table with serio-comic intensity before turning back to them. "I don't suppose either of you children have ever heard of the Kai Borer crystal?"
"Right so far," Leah admitted, unimpressed.
"Your ignorance isn't surprising," Hala explained. "Only a few people familiar with the exploration of Mimban have heard of it. Sarcopogian Xeno-archaeologists first heard about it on their one and only exploration expedition to this planet. They eventually decided it was a myth, a local tall story concocted by the natives in an attempt to coax more liquor from them. Mostly they forgot about it, but it was in the Imperial records when the mining outfit set up their hole here. According to the myth, the crystal is located in the temple of Pomojima. It's a minor local deity, say the greenies I've talked with."
"All sounds plausible," Luke was willing to concede. "Where's the temple?"
"A long haul from here, again according to the native information I've been able to piece together," Hala went on. "This world is rotten with temples, and remember, this Pomojima's a third-rate god, so nobody's been too interested in finding his temple house."
"Temples, gods, crystals," the princess murmured.
"Okay, suppose this legendary place does exist," she hypothesized, jabbing an accusing finger at Hala. "This Kyber crystal, just what is it supposed to be? A big gemstone of some kind?"
"Of some kind," Hala confessed with that sly smile of hers.
"Interested in spite of yourself, ain't you?" The princess looked away.
"We're interested in anything that brings us closer to getting off here," Luke admitted.
"I have to say this story of the crystal sounds intriguing on its own. What kind of gem is it?"
"Faugh! I could care less what kind of necklace it could make for some spoiled noblewoman boy." She eyed the princess meaningfully before continuing. "I'm more interested in a certain property it's supposed to have."
"More stories," the princess murmured. "How can you be so absolutely convinced, Hala? So certain that the Xeno-archaeologists weren't right and that it's all a native tale?"
"Because," Hala returned triumphantly, "I have proof." Reaching into her suit top, she extricated a packet of insulating material and unrolled it on the table. It contained a tiny metal box. Using the nail of her right-hand little finger, she turned the miniature combination lock several times. With an infinitesimal pop, the tiny lid flipped open. Luke peered close for a good look. The princess did the same. What they saw was a splinter of something that looked like red glass and glowed softly. The color was deeper, richer than red corundum. It had a vitreous luster resembling crystallized honey.
"Well," Hala asked them after a long moment, "now are you convinced I'm telling the truth?"
Still skeptical, the princess sat back and looked askance at Hala. A small fragment of radiant glass or plastic or an ordinary silicate treated to glow. "You expect me to accept that as proof?"
"This is a piece of the Kyber crystal itself," Hala insisted, offended by her disbelief.
"Sure it is," the princess agreed, nodding. "Where did you get it?"
"From a greenie, in exchange for a bottle of tipples."
Leah gave her a strained look.
"So you're trying to tell us that one of the primitive, superstitious locals would part with a shard of some half-legendary gem from one of his own temples for a lousy bottle of liquor?"
"It wasn't his ancestor's temple or god," Hala countered with mild contempt.
"Even if it was, it wouldn't matter. Look at the pitiful things."
She gestured, and they saw the degraded, crawling beggars pleading with patrons for a chance to perform the most servile acts in return for a sip of alcohol. "They'll do anything short of killing themselves for a drink, perform the most menial jobs for days for a tenth of a bottle."
"Maybe you're right," Leah had to admit uncomfortably.
"Just maybe this could be a piece of what you claim it to be from where you say it came from. I still don't see why you have this drive to go hunting for it, especially if you insist its jewel potential doesn't interest you."
"Still can't see, can you?" Hala murmured.
She turned sharply to face Luke. "Touch it, boy."
Luke hesitated, his gaze moving from the princess to Hala and back again. Hala removed it from the box and extended it out to him in a cupped hand.
"See, it's not hot," she told him. "Go on, touch it and believe. Are you afraid?"
Luke continued to hesitate.
"I'll touch it," the princess volunteered, extending a finger. But Hala pulled it out of her reach.
"No, this isn't for you. Touching it would prove nothing to you."
She reached out toward Luke again.
"Go on, boy, it won't hurt you."
Licking his lower lip, Luke cautiously probed for the splinter with a finger. Touched it. It felt exactly like what it resembled, a piece of glowing, heatless glass. But the sensations that coursed through him did not come from his finger, were not carried by the nerves in his skin. He quickly drew back his arm as if he'd contacted a live current.
"Luke, what is it?" the princess exclaimed, suddenly concerned. She stared accusingly at Halla. "You've hurt him!"
"No, little pretty mouth, I haven't hurt him. He has been startled and shocked and surprised, much as I was when I first contacted the crystal."
Leah faced Luke. "What did you feel?"
"I didn't feel anything," he informed her softly, now utterly convinced of the old woman's sincerity. "I experienced it. This," and he indicated the fragment of red mineral, "increases one's perception of the force. It magnifies and clarifies in proportion to its size and density, I think."
He gazed hard at Halla. "Anyone in possession of the entire crystal, if it's much larger than this fragment, would have such a lock on the force that he could do almost anything. Anything at all."
"My thought also, boy," Halla agreed. She replaced the fragment in its box and snapped the lid shut, then re-rolled it in the soft material. She handed it to Luke.
"To show you I mean what I say, you keep it. Go on, take it."
Luke did so, then slipped it into a pocket. "And now, I think," she went on, "you have no choice but to help me, and without delay."
"Who says so?" the princess grumbled.
"No one says so, little pretty. Facts say so. But touching the fragment, Luke here set up a tiny but perceptible stirring in the force. I felt it. It might have traveled no further than this tavern, or it might have affected sensitives halfway across the galaxy. There are four sensitives in the Imperial government who might feel such a stirring. However," she continued with a shrug, "as I said, the sensation might have gone no farther than myself. But can you take that chance, Luke? If you're both with the Alliance, as I'm pretty sure by now you are, then the Imperial should be real interested in Luke here. From what I hear, they don't like to think of there being anyone on the Rebel side capable of handling the Force. Besides, boy, you know what kind of damage a Force Master could do with the entire crystal in his hands. Can you take a chance on the Empire finding it first?" She looked almost apologetic. "Sorry, but I had to do something to shove you both past the no-return point. Couldn't risk having my first really secure helpers back out on me, could I?"
"She's right, Leah," Luke told his companion. "We can't take the chance of having the crystal fall into Imperial hands."
"You're right, Luke. Besides, Leah, we have no choice. We need Halla to help us get off planet, and she won't do that until we find the crystal anyway." He eyed her hopefully. "All right?" "My, my, what's this, a miner asking permission from his servant girl?" Neither of them could meet her shrewd gaze. "Take it easy, children. I won't give you away, whoever you are." She glanced around. "This isn't the most private place to do business. Now, if you're finished with your supper, we'd do well to talk elsewhere." Luke nodded. "It's about time we assured R2 and 3PO.
"Just a minute," Halla put out a restraining hand. "I thought there were only two of you."
Luke grinned. "Two droids I acquired. Inherited, you might say."
"Oh, that's all right, then. Never could afford a personal droid myself."
While paying their bill, Luke sneaked a glance in the direction of the Imperial civil servant. The man evidenced no further interest in them, didn't even look in their direction. The servant girl's story had apparently convinced him. Once outside with the double metal door panel shut behind them, Leah kicked Luke sharply in the shins. He went staggering, tumbled off the narrow walkway into the mud-filled trench which separated walkway from more solid street. When he recovered his senses, he gazed at her in surprise.
"Now you look more like a miner," she grinned at him. "That's for slapping me inside. No hard feelings?"
Luke shook some of the mud from his hands, wiped at his chest, then smiled up at her.
"No hard feelings, Leah." He reached up, extended a hand.
The princess leaned forward, her left hand gripping a supporting post, her right extended to help Luke. Her caution didn't matter. Luke yanked hard, and she plunged messily into the trench beside him. He sat there grinning as she turned around, looking down at herself in distress.
"Look at me! Look what you've done to me!"
"Made you look a little more like a servant girl," he replied easily. "Can't be too careful here, you know."
"Well, in that case—" Luke ducked the first handful of gook she heaved in his direction, caught part of the second, and grappled with her. Halla was watching, amused, until several large men came out of the tavern behind her. They paused, their attention also drawn by the wrestling match in the mud. They were all just drunk enough to be dangerous, and the longer they watched, the quieter they became. Much too quiet to suit Halla.
Chapter 4, page 56. "For our souls and health," she muttered hastily to the two combatants.
"Stop it, you two!"
Encased in mud, neither Luke nor the princess heard Hala's anxiously whispered warning. One of the men leaned to his right, spat something out between his beard, and commented, "Servants not supposed to fight back, boys." "Doesn't seem proper, somehow," his companion agreed. "Besides," the first man added, "fightin' in public's against the town decrees, ain't it?" "That's right," another man concurred. "Maybe we can straighten 'em out before the night troop takes 'em in. Be doin' 'em a good turn." He called down to Luke, "Hang in there, young fella. We won't let her hurt you." Grinning and chuckling among themselves, the five stepped down off the walkway. Finding herself providently ignored by all concerned, Hala slipped back into the shadows. "Is there anything we can do, madam?" a voice said into her ear. She jumped. Threepio jumped. "You've no right scaring me like that, you refugee from a scrap shop. I apologize, but my master and the lady—" "Oh, are you Threepio?" the droid nodded slightly. "And this must be R2. A beep sounded from a dim shape nearby. "We can't do anything yet, I'm afraid." She peered back out into the street. "Maybe those bulk boys are just teasing." Two of the men pulled Leah off Luke. That provided them with a good glimpse of her for the first time. Their initial amusement abruptly shifted as less pleasant emotions surfaced. "Well, now," murmured a barrel-chested individual with a Manchu mustache, "this is no droid servant, that's for sure." Leia became aware of the miner's stares. Several buckles and straps on the tight-fitting clothes had come undone while she'd been wrestling with Luke. Despite the coating of mud over them, their exposed areas were drawing an uncomfortable amount of attention. She felt as if something were crawling all over her under her clothing. Ignoring the mud and trying to draw the loose ends of her attire together, she drew herself up regally, announced with shaky dignity, "Thank you very much. This is a private matter. Now, if you'll all be so kind as to leave us to settle our differences." "Thank you very much. This is a private matter," one of the men echoed in a mincing tone. The others guffawed. The one with the beard leered down at her. "You're not a registered citizen, lady love," he indicated her shoulder. "No name tag, nothing. Fighting in a public street's against the law. Mine laws says we got to apprehend anyone breaking the law when and where we can. Come here and let me apprehend you." He reached out a massive paw. Backing up a quick step, the princess continued to glare at them, but her confidence was seeping away like snow on a stove. "I can't tell you who I am, but if any of you put a hand on me, you'll answer for it." Barrel Chest moved closer. There was no humor in his voice, and he did not smile at her. "Little mud hen, I'll put more than a hand on you." A slim form interposed itself between the princess and her would-be apprehender. "Look, this is a private argument, and we can finish it ourselves, friend." "I ain't your friend, sonny," the man said evenly, putting out a hand and shoving Luke backward. "Stay out of this. Your argument ain't important any more." The princess let out a startled exclamation. One of the other men had slipped up behind her and had grabbed her around the chest with his left arm. Luke stepped over quickly, brought the edge of his palm down hard on the other's wrist. Letting out a hurt yelp, the miner stepped back, holding his wrist. It had grown deathly silent on the street. All eyes were focused on Luke now, not on the princess. The only sounds in the mist came from the distant jungle. "Sonny boy wants to play," snickered the man whose wrist Luke had clipped. "Resistin' public apprehension." He flicked his right forearm. There was a clicking sound, and a double-bladed stiletto slid out from under his coverall sleeve. The flat of the blades lay flush against the back of his fist. Faded light from the shielded tavern windows reflected ominously off both blades as the man started moving in a low crouch toward Luke. The princess said nothing, just stared. So did Hala, Threepio, and R2 from the safety of the shadows. "Come on, sonny," the man urged, gesturing with his unarmed hand for Luke to approach. Then he flicked the weapon, and twin blades flashed out of his empty sleeve. He kicked his right leg, then his left. Double blades protruded from each boot sole. "Come on, let's dance. I'll make it last." Trying to watch all eight blades at once, Luke tried to distract his attacker. "The lady and I were discussing something. We don't need any outside involvement." "Too late, sonny," the man grinned. "You and I are involved now." His companions were watching and chuckling, occasionally nudging one another. They were obviously enjoying every second of the action. Jumping forward, the knife-wielder swung at Luke with his left hand, following up the miss as Luke moved back with a spinning side-kick, then swung around in an arc, reaching with his right hand. The double blades made whooshing sounds in the thick, damp night air. "We don't want any trouble," Luke declared, his hand moving reluctantly to the pommel of his lightsaber.
"In a couple of minutes you won't have to worry about it," his assailant assured him. He dove with a yell toward Luke, who dodged both kicks and arm swings agilely. "Look out, Luke!" the princess shouted. Too late. One of the other men had come up behind Luke and now pinned both arms to his sides. The knife-wielder was approaching leisurely, the smile gone from his face, making entwining motions with his fists. The blades gleamed like his eyes. "Fancy dancer, ain't you, boy? I'm tired of chasing you." "Do him slow, Jake," one of the onlookers advised. "Wise-mouth kid." "I said," Luke began, keeping his eyes on those nearing, weaving blades, even as his right hand moved to his waist again, "we don't want any trouble." He pushed the stud of the hilt of the saber. Activated, the backward-pointing, meter-long beam of blue energy materialized straight through the right thigh of the man who was holding him. Howling, the man let go of Luke and dropped to the ground, clutching at his leg. Knife-wielder froze for a moment, then started forward. With the saber, Luke described an intricate series of interweaving arcs and circles in the near darkness that caused his attacker to hesitate. A steady moaning came from the man on the ground. Luke lunged at the knife artist, just enough to make him retreat. "All of you now, clear off!" Instead of clearing off, the grim-faced quartet exposed more blades and other hand weapons. They began maneuvering to encircle Luke, staying just out of the range of that darting, lethal beam of light. Leah evened up the odds by leaping on the back of the man nearest her and clawing at his face. The three remaining men continued to probe at Luke with their own weapons, testing his speed and reflexes with professional acumen, talking among themselves and comparing notes on Luke's abilities while planning the best way to take him. If they were waiting for their fourth companion to join them, they'd be disappointed. He had his hands full with the princess, who was cursing them at the top of her lungs. Hallow was looking on anxiously when movement further up the street drew her attention from the fight. A knot of efficient figures clad in black and white armor was moving at a fast trot toward the tavern. From the approaching Imperials, she looked back to the stalemated battle. One man lunged at Luke from behind. Luke jumped above the charged prod the man was wielding and swung downward simultaneously. Off came a hand, cut and cauterized neatly at the wrist, to land in the mud and lie there smoking slightly. The man fell backward, speechless, staring at his carbonized stump. The troopers were close now. Halla left her hiding place and, gesturing for R2 and 3PO to follow, slunk off down the access way between the buildings, vanishing into the night. After a second's pause to see they could do no good by getting themselves captured, the two droids followed. Both remaining assailants continued to stalk Luke, more cautiously now. Having dispatched her single opponent with judicious pressure in the right place, the princess was looking to take on another when something sun-bright and loud exploded in their midst, stunning everyone. They all turned, blinking against the lingering glare, to see a number of energy rifles focused on them. "Put up your weapons," the sergeant in charge ordered them sharply, the angular markings on his armored sleeve showing triple in the dim light. Matching marks crossed his helmet. "You are remanded to custody in the name of the Emperor for fighting with weaponry in a public place." As soon as the miners had retracted or otherwise holstered their various weapons, Luke shut off his saber. Two troopers came around and collected the small arsenal. The princess noticed her one victim recovering consciousness and kicked him soundly. "You there, stop that," the sergeant ordered. "Sorry," she replied sweetly. They were marched through the town under armed convoy. Luke took the opportunity to study the surrounding structures. Few showed much difference from those that already encountered. In a town like this, interchangeability was an economic necessity, he reflected. Those inhabitants who encountered them pressed close to the walls of the buildings and whispered among themselves, pointing from time to time to the unlucky miscreants. The spectators obviously had some idea of what was in store for them. Luke wished he did, too. "Where do you suppose they're taking us?" he murmured to the princess. "To the local jail. Where else?" Luke nodded forward. "If that's it, I'm impressed." They were approaching a massive, forbidding ziggurat of ancient Mimbanian architecture. It was constructed of gray and black stone, exactly like the ruins Luke had spotted when searching for the princess's ship. The edifice towered, despite its roughly tapering shape, over the more recent, simpler structures of the mining town. "Not your average lockup," he commented softly as they strode under the thick stone arch over the entrance.
Boldly he queried the trooper next to him, "What is this place?" The helmeted soldier turned to him with, "Prisoners and violators of the law are to provide answers, not questions." Surprisingly, as they moved down a stone corridor lined with modern tubing and electronic componentry, the trooper volunteered some information. "This is one of the old temples built by the natives of this world." Luke's surprise was genuine. "You mean those pitiful wretches who beg for drinks?" Unexpectedly, the man laughed. "Good, you've got a sense of humor. You'll need it. Greenies building this? You must spend all your time in the mines. Not me." The trooper swelled with self-importance. "I'm always trying to improve myself, as you know," he began. "There are several semi-intelligent races on this world, besides the Greenies. Some are more degenerate than the others. Whatever race built these places," and he gestured with his rifle at the stone roof arching overhead, "has long since died out, at least insofar as the Imperial Survey has been able to determine." They turned another corner, and Luke marveled at the size of the structure. "This one's been converted to house the mine offices and Imperial headquarters for Mimban." He shook his head. "You miners, you don't know much of anything except your own work." "That's true," Luke admitted, feeling no remorse at damning all miners. They hadn't been particularly hospitable to him since he'd landed in their company. "We're from another town," he added for good measure. The trooper's brief venture into camaraderie vanished, and he replied coldly, "That may or may not be. You chronic brawlers lie a lot. Just because the Empire tolerates a limited amount of disorder here as a safety valve for you people is no reason to abuse the privilege. You make it tough on all your fellows." He pointed ahead to the trooper who was hefting the satchel of confiscated weapons. "When killing devices are involved, it becomes more than a question of worker discipline. Charges will be brought. Too bad for you. I hope you get what you deserve." "Thanks," said Luke dryly. One of the miners grumbled. "Not our fault. Saber man and the woman led us on." "Shut up, you," ordered the sergeant. "You'll have your own chance to tell your side of it to Captain Supervisor Grammel." That caused both Luke and Leah to start violently. Grammel was the man Halla had warned them about. "Perhaps he'll be generous," the sergeant went on philosophically. "Good workers are difficult to get here. He may leave you most of your fingers." "I wished we'd asked Halla more about this Grammel," Luke murmured. "Yes, Halla," the princess sounded discouraged. "She didn't break her back trying to save us, did she?" "What could she do?" Luke countered, "against Imperials." "You're right, I guess, but I would have thought she'd try something." Leah shrugged. "I suppose I can't blame her for saving herself." "At least 3PO and R2 got away," Luke added softly. "Hey, any more chatter back there and I'll take off some digits myself," the sergeant warned. "How would you like to bury yourself under 4 feet of mud for about an hour?" the princess snapped. "I wouldn't," admitted the sergeant calmly. "How would you like your pretty tongue burned out with a low-power blaster?" Leah subsided. They were in enough trouble. She'd gain nothing by provoking them more. She concentrated her stare on the middle of the sergeant's back, trying to drive him insane. The sergeant showed no hint of being affected. "Probably solid bone under the helmet," she mused. They turned a last corner and entered a large chamber. After the Spartan gray stone inside and out, the sybaritic furnishings here came as a shock. Real and artificial fur was used lavishly. Many of the creature comforts Luke would have associated with a far more developed world than Mimban were present. They were not flaunted, however, which indicated that the inhabitant of this chamber regarded them as his natural accoutrements. Across the chamber a single man sat behind an imposing functional desk. "Bring them over, Sergeant," his bored voice was broken and gravelly. Luke thought he must have suffered some damage to his vocal cords. At a gesture from the sergeant, the 7 prisoners, including one with a limp and a crudely bandaged leg, were herded across the room to stand close by the desk. The most impressive thing about Grammel, Luke thought, was the reaction to him by the miners. All of their bluster and swagger had disappeared. They stood staring at the floor, the walls, each other, anywhere but at the man behind the desk. Feet shuffled uneasily. Without seeming to stare, Luke tried to see the personage who inspired such respectful subservience from hardened men like the 5 miners. Grammel had his head buried in his hands as he studied some paper. Finally, he rubbed his eyes, folded his hands, and leaned his elbow on the desk as he surveyed them. Grammel added no color to his surroundings. His face was eggshell pale, and the image of the Imperial officer was tarnished further when he stood to reveal a modest paunch
curving gently from beneath his sternum like a frozen waterfall of suet, to crash and tumble somewhere below the waistline in a jumble of uniform. The silver and gray uniform itself was spotless and neat, however, as if in an attempt to camouflage the belly beneath. Above the tight, high collar, the neck jumped out to a square jaw bordered by a drooping mustache. The line of that facial hair matched well the dour expression the captain's supervisor wore habitually, Luke guessed. Tiny, penetrating eyes peered out from beneath brows like a granite ridge, overtopped by uneasy black and gray hair. This was a face that rarely laughed, Luke decided, and then for the wrong reasons. Grandma began examining each of the uneasy group in turn. Luke borrowed a hint from the miners and tried to concentrate solely on a stain on the furred floor. "So these are the disturbers who break the peace to fight with killing weapons," he observed disapprovingly. Once more that voice grated on Luke's ears, like a piece of rusty machinery long overdue for lubrication. Full of grimy squeaks and groans, it suited Grammo perfectly. Stepping forward smartly, the sergeant reported, "Yes, Captain Supervisor, permission to take two wounded to the infirmary." "Granted," said Grammo. He did not quite smile, but his permanent frown faded enough for his lips to straighten slightly. "For a time, they will be better off than those who remain here." Under guard, the handless miner and the one with the limp were taken from the room. Grammo resumed his examination of the remaining people. When he reached Luke and the princess, his mouth twitched as if someone had jabbed him with a pin. "You two I don't recognize. Who are you?" He came around from behind the desk, stood nose to nose with Luke. "You boy, what are you?"
"Just a contract miner, Captain Supervisor," Luke stammered, trying to sound appropriately terrified. It wasn't a difficult task, nor did he mind a little verbal groveling if his life hung in the balance. Grandma moved to stare down at the princess. Now he smiled gingerly, as if the effort hurt him. "And you, my dear, you're a miner too, I suppose."
"No." Leah didn't look at him. She nodded briefly toward Luke. "I'm his servant."
"That's right," Luke said quickly. "She's only my—"
"I can hear, boy," Grandma murmured. He stared back at her, ran a finger down one cheek. "Pretty women." She twitched out of his grip. "Spirited, too." He looked at Luke. "I congratulate you on your taste, boy."
"Thank you, sir," Leah glared at him, but what else could he have said?
"Your manners are probably matched only by your incompetence," the princess told him. Grandma merely nodded with satisfaction. "Manners," he repeated. "Incompetence. Odd way for a servant to speak." He barked at the sergeant standing stiffly at attention nearby. "What identification did you find on these two?"
"Identification, Captain Supervisor? We assumed that it was standard, sir."
"You haven't checked identification, Sergeant?" Grammo inquired slowly. Succeeding only in giving the impression of a man sweating beneath his armor, the officer explained lamely, "No, sir, we just assumed."
"Never assume, Sergeant. The universe is full of dead people who lived by assumption."
He turned politely toward Luke and Leah. "Your identification now, please." Luke made a pretense of searching his clothing. Tried to look stunned when the non-existent identification didn't materialize. The princess fought to imitate him. "We must have lost it during the fight," he declared, and then hurriedly tried to change the subject. "These three now attacked us without provocation, and—"
"It's a lie," one of the miners objected strenuously. He looked to Grammo for sympathy, found none.
"You," Grammo told the man very quietly, "shut up." The man complied with alacrity. A trooper entered the chamber, called out ingratiatingly, "Captain Supervisor?" Grandma appeared irritated at the interruption.
"Yes, what is it?"
The trooper approached the desk, whispered something in Grandma's ear. Grandma looked surprised.
"Yes, I'll see him."
He walked toward the door. A small, cloaked figure entered and engaged Grandma in conversation. Luke couldn't make out more than an occasional word. Leaning over, he whispered to the princess,
"I don't like this, Leah."
She whispered back tightly, "You have this wonderful evocative way about you, Luke, of reducing the most excruciatingly uncomfortable circumstances to the merely mundane." Luke looked hurt. The captain's supervisor concluded his conversation with the stunted figure, which promptly bowed and scurried from the room. Idly, Luke wondered if the thing under the cloak was human or maybe one of the natives. His speculation was interrupted by Grammo's return. "You miners started the fight," he stated in a no-nonsense tone, pointedly excluding Luke and Leah from the category.
"Oh, but Captain Supervisor," the largest of the three began obsequiously, "we were provoked. We were trying only to uphold the town law about fighting." "By breaking it," Grammel countered, "and by attacking this young lady?" "It wasn't anything serious," the man ventured. "We were only going to have a little fun first." "Your fun will cost each of you a half-time period's pay," Grammel declared. "I'm going to be lenient with you." The three men hardly dared appear hopeful. "The mine laws here are lax and permit you considerable leeway in terms of relaxation." Now he glowered at them. "However, assault with intent to murder is not the Empire's idea of productive leisure. Whatever," he added as an afterthought, "I may think personally." Emboldened, one of the miners decided to push his luck. Stepping forward, he announced, "Captain Supervisor Grammel, I appeal the judgment." Grammel eyed the man the way a botanist would a new species of weed. "You have that right. On what grounds?" "Shortness. Shortness of trial and informality of circumstances." The man finally got out. "Very well. Since I am the imperial law here, I will consider your appeal myself." Grammel paused a moment, then said easily, "Your appeal is rejected." "Then I appeal to the Imperial Department of Resources representative in charge of mining operations," the man riposted. "I want to see the judgment reviewed in another fashion." "Certainly," Grammel agreed. He walked over to the wall behind his desk. Taking a long, thin bar of plastic from its place there, he pressed the switch at one end as he came back around the desk. "The conversation has been recorded," he informed them all. He depressed another switch, and the bar showed a moving line of words across its waxy surface. When the record had finished, he raised and abruptly thrust one end of the unyielding plastic into the argumentative miner's left eye. Blood and pulp squirted in all directions as the man collapsed, screaming, to the floor. One of his terrified companions bent over him, tried to staunch the flow of blood from the ruined socket. It ran in a steady stream down the man's face and coverall front. "You three are dismissed," Grammel told them perfunctorily, as if nothing unusual had happened. "Sergeant? Captain Supervisor? Take these three into the rear holding cells. Their two companions can join them as soon as they're well enough. Let them sit and think for a while. Record their names and identification codes so that they may more easily pay their fines. Unless," he finished conversationally, tapping the recorder rod in one palm, "someone else would like to appeal my judgment." As the two miners half-carried, half-dragged their unconscious companion to the exit under guard, Grammel gestured at them with the rod. "He still has his eye, you know. It's recorded permanently on this. Bring him back when he recovers, and I'll let him see it again." The sergeant saw the guards and miners out, then returned to stand watch beside the door. "I dislike these administrative details," Grammel said amiably to Luke and the princess, "but this is a largely unknown, unexplored world, and I have little time to waste. Sometimes my decisions must be fast and harsh. Only the degree of their ability to devise more sophisticated debasements for themselves separates the human animals that work here from the natives. This kind of inventiveness has been a persistent and lamentable quality of mankind's for millennia. Realizing that as you must, I'm sure you two will be more sensible than those lower types who just left us." He sat back on the edge of the desk, commenced tapping his lower leg with a red-tipped rod. Luke watched it nervously. "I told you, Captain Supervisor," he reiterated, "we must have lost our identification in the fight. It must have fallen in the mud. If you'll just let us go back there, I'm sure we can find it. Unless," he added with seeming unconcern, "someone came by after the fight and stole it." "Oh, I don't think any of our hard-working citizens would do that," Grammel commented, turning away. He looked sharply back over his shoulder. "In fact, I don't think it's lying there either. I don't think you two had any identification to lose. From what I've been told, you both are more than strangers to this town. You're strangers to the mine, to the Imperial presence here, to this very world. How you arrived undetected and unauthorized and in one piece, I can't imagine." He gritted his teeth and added dangerously, "I will find out, however. I always find out what I want to know." "That's funny," noted the princess, "because you strike me as having a particularly limited capacity for learning." Her remark didn't faze Grammel. If anything, the princess's studied insults appeared to please him. "A little while ago, young lady, you called me incompetent. Now you belittle me intellectually." "I'm no intellectual, but I'm also neither incompetent nor uneducated. I got that way by learning how to get answers to my questions." but your first comment was correct about my manners." He drew back his left foot and kicked her in the left thigh with the point of his boot. Moaning in pain, the princess grabbed her side below the hip and sank forward to her knees. Her right hand stopped her fall, while the other continued holding the bruised place. Luke raged inside, but resolutely stared straight ahead. This was not the place or time to die.